went off all by yourself. How is it you are here, with her? Don't you know what happened? They're dead, all of them. Angus and Kinnart and all the men who stood up with them. They cut off their heads and left them lying, and they took the women from the whale back, and now Eivind is a prisoner and Summerled—
Hush, Rona said, patting Nessa's shoulder. Hush now, little one. I'm very well, as you see. This girl's been nothing but kind to me, though she's weary and sick and full of sadness, and I can't understand a word she says. Hush your weeping now. I know what happened at the whaleback. That's a mourning will never be forgotten. A terrible sorrow, a great wrong. Knowing such evils are to come makes bearing them no easier. You must sit down, Nessa. Here, and get this soup into you, girl. There's a task to be done, and your mind won't be fit for it if you neglect to nourish your body. There now, dry your tears.
Shh,
drink the soup first, then tell us.
Rona's deep eyes were calm, watching as Nessa ate broth and bread, as Gard feasted on crusts and scraps of mutton bone. Margaret did not eat. She stood silent by the fire, waiting.
How can I tell her?
Nessa whispered when the meal was over.
What I carry here is... it is the final witness to her husband's murder, the only voice that cannot be denied. You remember what I was told, find the truth in ash and bone. Already this harp speaks, though the last string is not yet wound tight. How can I say it? She'll think me no better than grave-robbing carrion.
Rona nodded.
Tell her the truth. What else can you do?
You must explain yourself now, Margaret said. Speak in this language so that I can understand. There's to be no more talk in the island tongue. I must be careful here. How do I know I can trust you? Tell me why you are on this land, and where you are going. Tell me how you escaped the... Tell me how you got away from the whaleback that morning. Show me what you carry in this bag, and be quick about it. I have many armed men here, and I am under no obligation to help you. I understand. Still, we share a bond as women, the three of us. And I see honesty in your face, as I did the last time we met, Nessa said. What was this girl doing here, all by herself among guards in an isolated cottage? Wasn't she Somerled's sister-in-law? Why wasn't she at his court?
I helped you then, or tried to. Did you make use of the charm I gave you?
Margaret's lips tightened. Nessa noticed how thin she'd grown, thin and worn, the skin of the cheeks pale and dry, the eyes shadowed. Her hands were clenched together, her shoulders tense.
It doesn't matter, Margaret snapped. That's past now. Tell me, give me answers, and quickly.
Nessa's heart was pounding. There was no right way to say this.
Before I do that, I would thank you for giving Rona refuge here. I don't know how that came about, but it is no longer safe for my folk to wander abroad, and I recognize that your kindness has probably saved her life.
She turned to Rona.
I said thank you,
she told the wise woman in her own tongue.
For putting up with you, that is. You're a stubborn old woman, too brave for your own good.
It was no trouble, Margaret said gravely. Your friend makes undemanding company, and she's earned her keep cooking for the men, though I could do without her herbal teas. Now go on. I need your account of yourself. They say you are King Angus's close kin. I did not know that the day I came to your dwelling. You must have thought me somewhat ill-mannered. Nessa managed to smile.
No, my lady. I thought you a little misguided, but courageous and open.
You've given me no cause to change my mind, even though your people have cut down my own with heedless savagery.
I need your help tonight. I must make my way to Somerled's hall. I must be there by dawn.
I need a horse, and I need you to let me pass unhindered.
Margaret's eyes widened.
That, surely, would be the height of folly, she said. If you are indeed Angus's kin, you should go anywhere but there.
If Somerled knew you lived, he would see you only as an enemy and a threat to his authority. You should leave the islands forever. To travel to the settlement spells only death or captivity for you. Why would you do it? You do not seem a foolish girl. I can explain, but this will be very shocking to you. It will distress you greatly. I can't consider letting you go unless you tell me what you're doing, Margaret said gravely. My husband was chieftain here. I have a certain responsibility. Nessa could not hold back a flare of sudden anger. Forgive me, she said. But is not that responsibility somewhat shadowed, now that your husband's men have hacked down my kinsmen and taken my kinswoman captive? You should hang your head in shame that our good king was burned in his hall, and the ancient seat of the folk made into a bloody killing field, only because your husband's people chose to set foot on these islands. This place has been our home since the time before memory. You tell me to leave forever. It is I who should bid you leave, I think. Your responsibility should have been to stop those acts of slaughter. This is too late now. Margaret stood very still. Her lips were a thin line, the restless hands clutched and twisted together. If it is too late, she said in a whisper, then why are you here? Ah, said Nessa. Will you listen? Will you listen until I am finished? Margaret gave a tight nod. So Nessa told the tale, how they had found Eivind and sheltered him, how she had spoken to him about Ulf's murder, and how the wolfskin had confirmed what the folk already knew in their hearts for truth. Somerled had killed his own brother because he wanted what Ulf had, land, power, chieftainship. She did not say what trembled on the tip of her tongue, that perhaps Somerled wanted Ulf's wife as well. That part of it was Margaret's. The truth of what was between those two would probably never be told. Nessa described Eivind's stand against the men who would have captured Rona. She told how he had gone to confront Somerled and escaped, and how he had given himself up so that Nessa might go free. There was a part of the tale she left out. It was just as well, she thought, that Rona could not follow the details of this narrative, for the wise woman was an acute interpreter of the unspoken. And Nessa could barely utter her warrior's name without trembling, without feeling such conflict inside her that she was hard-pressed to keep her mind on what must be done. She had made a promise, a deep and solemn one. Just how she would keep it was a matter for later, once the task was complete. Margaret listened in silence. At one point she bowed her head. Later she sat down and put her hands over her face. It was not so much a reaction of shock, more the response of one who sees that her worst imaginings are indeed true. The hardest part was still to come. I need to ask you, Nessa said carefully. If, in the old tales of your people, the stories of Thor and Odin and your ancestors, there are any that touch on... She glanced helplessly at Rona. But Rona only shrugged, unable to comprehend the foreign words, though her eyes showed she had an idea of what it was that Nessa wrestled with. Among our tales, there is one about a princess drowned by her sister, Nessa went on, her voice shaking. Her body floats downstream, and a miller finds it. He makes a harp from her bones and hair, and carries it to the king's court. And there it plays a terrible tune. A song that relates the tale of the wrong that was done. She was unable to look Margaret in the eyes. Have you any such stories? Do the people from the Snowlands know of the instrument of bone, which speaks only truth? The undeniable witness? Margaret said not a word. She rose and took two steps forward, and with trembling fingers she reached to draw back the wrapping, revealing the graceful, small harp gleaming in the firelight, the neat pegs of finger bone, the twists of sea-rack that bound the joints, the dark, silent strings. The harp quivered of itself. Ulf, it hummed low. Ulf, chieftain. Margaret's face was grey, her eyes dark pools of horror. She stepped back, made a choking noise, and fled out of the back door of the cottage. Sounds of painful retching could be heard, punctuated by strangled gasps for air. Nessa's heart was pounding. She made to go after the other girl.
No, said Rona. Leave her be. There's nothing ails her that time, and a bit of hard thinking won't cure, poor lass. Now tell me, I see what you've made, and I know what it's for. I'm impressed. You summoned the seal tribe? That was risky. What did they want in return?
They didn't ask me for anything, Nessa said, shivering. Not yet, anyway. The hidden tribe helped me too. All played a part.
It's as well the old ones are stirring. The old woman's voice was grave. There aren't many of us left. That day on the whaleback, the flower of our people was plucked before its time. Say you get to court with this harp, and it tells its tale, and people believe it. What then? The folk are weakened almost beyond saving, and these Norsemen have weaponry in numbers. Maybe you persuade them this cruel chieftain is not the best leader they have, but what do you see them doing about it? They'll set up another in his place and start the whole thing again.
This is not like you, Fran Nessa.
Where is your faith? Where's your belief? We cannot fail. Truth must win here, truth and goodness. Eivind will help me.
Her voice trailed off.
Oh, yes, Rona asked, brows raised.
If I can reach him in time, Nessa whispered. If I can get there before Somerled kills him, trust me, Rona. I haven't forgotten that I am a priestess.
Margaret was coming back. She held herself very straight, shoulders square, head high, as if determined to show she was a noblewoman and in control. She walked past the harp, not looking now, and sat rigidly upright on the bench by the hearth.
Cover it up, she said. I don't want to see it. Did you... No, I can't say it. Was it you?
I made this, Nessa told her gently.
I am a priestess of the mysteries. Our faith has sustained us since the days of the oldest ancestors. It has guided us since time before time. Its pathways are found in the depths of earth and ocean, the eternal patterns of sun and moon. I have studied the ways of it since I was a small child, and Rona has been my wise teacher. There is a solemn ritual for the making of such charms. Both the taking and the returning are carried out with the deepest respect. If you visited your husband's grave, ma'am, tomorrow, you would see it quite untouched. Would not Ulf want justice? This is the only way he can have a voice here, my lady. Let us grant him the right to speak. Once that is done, he can rest peacefully in this place that he loved and honoured. Ulf was a good man. What happened here was not his doing, though it was his desire for voyaging that began it. We owe it to him, and to King Angus, and to all the fine men whose blood has been shed in this dark time, to carry this witness to Somerled's hall, and ensure the future of the islands does not descend into chaos and darkness. I need your help, Margaret. Without you, I cannot be there in time.
You can see I'm sick, Margaret said flatly.
Sick and weary. What help could I be? You told me yourself it's too late now. I should have stopped him. I should have been strong enough. I did try. I thought I could sway him. I thought he would listen to me as he did in those early days. But he wouldn't listen. Nobody would listen. They're afraid to speak out, since they know what he can do to them. In such a place as this, there's great power for the taking, if a man is bold enough. I spoke, and he sent me away so he didn't have to hear me. Nothing has gone right here. Nothing. I was angry at first to be banished from his court, but now I'm glad. Out here I don't have to think about those things. I don't have to think about anything.
The voice was expressionless, but Nessa saw the trembling of the young widow's hands, the clenched jaw.
She saw what it was costing Margaret to maintain that tightly held control. There were tears very close, but on no account would Margaret allow them to fall. "Is it love that weakens your will for justice?" Nessa asked softly. "Love for a man in whom, against all the evidence of your eyes, you still see some spark of goodness? Or do you not believe what I have told you of the manner of your husband's death? There is a voice here which can give you indisputable proof of the truth, if you will let it speak." "Love?" Margaret whispered. "Love weighs nothing in this balance. I have come beyond caring. There is no point in it." "Would you give up so easily?" Nessa asked her. "How old are you, my lady?" Taken by surprise, Margaret answered automatically. 17. "Old enough to learn a woman's opinion means nothing in a world where men play all the games that matter. Old enough to know how it feels to be discarded once I'm no longer deemed to be of value." She bit back more words. Her eyes glinted with tears. "You and I are of an age," Nessa told her. "You have decided not to act. That is your choice. I will tell you what I will do tonight. I will get on a horse and ride to Somerled's hall. I will walk into that place and demand to be seen. I am Angus's only surviving kin and the last of the royal line in the Light Isles. And at court, I will be surrounded by enemies. And I am afraid, believe me. There I will speak of the way Somerled murdered his brother and brought darkness to this fair place. And I will release the voice of the only true witness to that crime. Your people are not all bad. They are merely slaves of fear and of custom. I hope this voice will awaken them and open their eyes to what is true and just. There are women and children of my own folk captive in that settlement, Margaret. The Wolfskin is a prisoner there, and Somerled will silence him forever if I do not reach him by dawn." "The Wolfskin? You mean Eivind?" Once more Margaret was startled into speech. "Somerled would never kill Eivind. He loves him. Eivind is the only person he has ever really cared about." Nessa nodded. "Perhaps that is why he will do it, because he cannot bear to see his own reflection in his friend's eyes, the image of a man who has failed utterly in his life's great ambition. This is no king. It is no more than a warped and crazy shadow of a leader, deformed by the cruelty he carries within him and can never be rid of. The sound of truth on his dearest friend's lips must cut him like a knife. I cannot say what is in Somerled's mind, but I am a priestess, and I hear the voices of the spirit. I know that if I do not leave soon, it will be too late. Stay here, if you will. It is your choice to shut your eyes to the truth as soon as it becomes too hard to bear. It is your choice to block out what is too difficult for you. Never mind what your husband wanted. Never mind the courage I once saw in your eyes when you sought me out at a great danger to yourself. That strong girl has disappeared. At 17, you have become a frightened old woman. I see that you are sick. I suppose that is an excuse of sorts. Give me a horse, Margaret, and let me go unpursued. Let me go now, that's all I'm asking." Margaret had moved away. She had her back to them, her arms tightly folded. There was tension in every corner of her slender frame. "I hope you weren't too cruel," Rona muttered. "The girl's a good girl, and she's been kind to me. She's had a hard time of it." Images of that bloody morning on the whaleback flashed through Nessa's mind in stark and uncompromising detail. She said nothing. Time was passing. How long would it take to ride there in the dark? Margaret was silent. "Oh, quickly, answer quickly." She heard that voice again. "I want so much to live." "Right," said Margaret curtly, not turning. "Right. I still understand duty, no matter how low your opinion of me. You realize you can't ride with the instrument and the wolfskin. You've no hope at all of getting past the sentry posts, or of reaching the hall itself without their taking everything away from you. Perhaps you're not so clever after all.
Perhaps not, whispered Nessa, torn between hope and despair.
And Nora's evened. Just stubborn, the two of us, unset on truth.
It is Ulf who must be clever for us. Ulf and yourself.
Stop it, snapped Margaret furiously. Don't make me weep, then I won't be able to do anything. She walked briskly to the door, flung it open and called out into the night. Bjorn? Ash, come here!
There was a sound of running feet and a rapid exchange of words outside. Nessa bent to gather up the harp.
Rona's eyes narrowed.
What's that wee pack you bear on your back? She asked.
Nessa had completely forgotten the sea woman's gift.
That? I don't know. I was given it. Perhaps it can be left behind. It will be hard enough to ride and carry the harp safely without this as well.
Left behind? I shouldn't think so, Rona said.
A gift from those who helped you in the making, was it? Best open it up now. Such bounty is rarely bestowed, and never without a purpose.
There is no time. Open it up, Nessa.
She slipped the small packet from her back and unrolled the strange, weed-like wrapping. The contents flowed out, iridescent, pearly, a lovely green-blue length of finely woven fabric. It was whisper-soft to the touch and smelled faintly of salt.
Oh!
Margaret's voice came from behind them. She stood on the threshold, staring.
Oh, how beautiful!
A fine gift, Rona said, lifting the gossamer stuff with careful fingers. Beautiful, magical, and, as I said, for a purpose. You don't go out to confront a king dressed in your old working clothes. Nessa, you must wear this tonight.
Highly impractical, Margaret observed, guessing at Rona's meaning.
I'd better find you a warm cloak. Rona, there's no time for this, Nessa hissed.
Why didn't they understand it must be now, straight away? For every moment that passed took Eivind one step closer to death.
She knew him. He would not wait for her. Was it not in the very nature of a wolfskin to charge forward, heedless of the danger? To risk all in each glorious act of challenge?
Perhaps Eivind had changed, but that crazy courage was still in him, and he could not deny it. She had seen it at the whaleback. She had seen it again on the morning they woke in each other's arms, when he sacrificed his own freedom for hers. Eivind would want her out of danger, away from Somerled. He would not wait for her.
Let me be, Rona. I must go now.
Hush, lass. This will only take a moment. Let me help you.
The gown was of simple cut, high-waisted, narrow-sleeved, with a skirt that fell straight to the floor in graceful folds. The shimmering, shifting fabric, holding all the hues of the ocean in its fluid surface, made this a garment fit for some mysterious queen of ancient story. There was a circlet for the head, and Rona insisted this too be worn. Chafing to be gone, Nessa submitted to the wise woman's attentions, since to argue was to delay her departure still farther. Margaret waited, pale and silent, a warm cloak in her hands, another around her shoulders. At last, Rona turned her student around one, two, three times, and announced herself satisfied.
"I can't come with you, lass," she said, eyes shrewd but gentle as she scrutinized Nessa's face.
"I believe in you. I believe you can do it. You wouldn't have come this far if all the powers of the islands hadn't been there behind you. Win the deed for us, Nessa. Let the truth be heard."
Nessa bowed her head, saying nothing. If she allowed herself to think too much about what this meant, the magnitude and importance of it, it might become just too difficult to go on. But she must go on. There was nobody else to do it.
"I'll come after you," Bruno was saying. "I'll come when it's late, at a pace befitting an old woman. I hope you'll save the big fellow. There's goodness in him. It took me a while to see it, but he's got a spirit to match his stature, and a great will for survival, our warrior. I just hope the two of you don't break each other's hearts. Don't cry, Nessa. This task will need all your strength. Time enough for weeping later when it's done.
The men are ready, Margaret said. I'll bear the wolfskin for you, if you're prepared to let it out of your hands. It's a long way, and we'll need to be quick if what you say is true.
Do you mean...
Margaret had already gone outside. Through the doorway, Nessa could see several men on horseback, waiting. Some of them bore torches.
You can't possibly go on your own, Margaret said over her shoulder, as she made her way down the steps.
In my company, you can be admitted to the hall without question. After that, it will be up to you. These men will guard us on the journey. All are loyal to me.
There was a subtle emphasis on the final word.
Give me the wolfskin. I'll carry it behind me. The old woman must pass the other thing up to you. I cannot lay hands on it.
A visible shudder ran through her.
Thank you, Nessa breathed, not sure exactly why Margaret had made this decision, but recognizing the courage in it.
What does she think she's doing?
Rona's voice was sharp. She stood in the doorway behind them, eyes fixed upon Margaret, who had mounted her own horse and was directing a man to tie the wolfskin behind her saddle. Another fellow waited to help Nessa up on a steady-looking grey mare.
She's not planning to go with you. She shouldn't be riding. Tell her, Nessa.
What?
Tell her what I said.
The message was passed on. Margaret's lips tightened, her face turning still paler in the torchlight.
You think I care about that?
She snapped, looking straight at Rona.
It's nothing. It's less than nothing. Now come on, we're wasting time.
Foolish girl, Rona muttered.
But she said no more, merely cradled the little harp in her arms while Nessa mounted the horse, then passed the instrument up to her pupil. Shadow danced around the horse's feet, setting them astir with her excited barking. Guards stood on the steps beside the old woman, and her gnarled fingers stroked his head abstractedly as she muttered ancient words of blessing under her breath. The horses moved out of the yard and away across the moonlit fields to the east. Rona watched until they were hidden in darkness, and then she returned slowly to the fire, guard padding after her. She delved deep in a little crock set on the hearth and scattered a handful of dried weed into the flames. As the pungent smell of the herbs of divination rose into the warm air within the cottage, Rona closed her eyes and summoned the trance. There would be no sleep tonight.
Somerled gazed at Brother Tig with chill eyes.
"Why should we hear you?" he inquired. "You've been in these people's pockets all along, Angus's right-hand man, with your skewed translations and your pathetic attempts to conceal your spying under the cloak of spreading your ridiculous faith. The whole case against Eivind is based on the way the islanders ensnared and corrupted him. Any evidence from you in his support can only strengthen that case, surely."
Olaf turned his searching gaze on the brother.
"How did you come by that injury on your face?" he asked bluntly. "A priest, of whatever persuasion, should never be the target of acts of violence. Are we to take this as evidence that Somerled is right, that you are not, in fact, a holy brother, but some kind of spy?"
Brother Tig smiled.
"No, my lord. My only allegiance is to God and to truth. For the ultimate truth rests in God. I see here tonight a man on trial, a man I know lives by truth, because he can conceive of no other way to act. I see him trapped by falsehood and deception into a position where he cannot prevail. Perhaps I cannot change that, but my faith compels me to speak on his behalf, since his brother has been prevented from doing so. As for the injury, I came by it on my way here. You all know the dangers that lurk by the wayside for lone travellers in these parts. Dangers the islanders knew nothing of until your kind made this place your home. It seems even priests are not immune from such attacks."
"This is unfortunate,"
Olaf Svensson muttered, narrowing his eyes as he scrutinized the priest. He turned to Somerled.
"What do you think? Shall we hear the fellow? What do you mean, prevented?"
Suddenly Harold Silvertongue's voice had changed. He sat down heavily.
"The word was that Eirik Halvardsson was asked to come here in support of his brother, and refused to do so. That's what I was told."
Someone had opened his mouth to reply, but Tig was quicker. His voice was quite soft, but resonant with long practice at psalms and prayers.
"Eirik was on his way," Tig said. "Both he and his companion Thord were much concerned when I brought them news that Eivind was in a position of such danger. They intended to depart that same evening. If they have not yet arrived, it can only be that someone stopped them. Perhaps the same someone who attempted to assault me on my way here. Not being a wolfskin myself, I'm afraid I fled. Very fortunately, I was close to the lakeshore, and while I can swim a little, my assailant lacked that skill. So here I am, somewhat damp and bruised, but otherwise none the worse for wear. God watches over his children. I imagine Eirik and Thord put up a great deal more of a fight, and it would have taken many men to subdue them."
"Wait a moment," someone had said sharply. "What do you mean you took them the news? News of what, exactly? When was this?"
"I came to the safe harbour in the evening, the day before King Angus and his household were slain. I went straight to find Eirik, and gave him a message before Brother Lorcan and I continued on to our lodgings. Eirik and Thord were readying themselves as we left."
"Message?" snapped Somerled. "What message?"
Tig glanced at Eivind.
"I had encountered your wolfskin earlier that day, making his way here to the settlement. The poor fellow had completely lost his memory of the winter months, but he was determined to find you and do his best to deter you from any attack on the folk."
"I see."
There was a dangerous note in Somerled's voice.
"Do you know who sheltered Eivind during this mysterious absence from our settlement? Was he indeed harbored by these two witches we hear of, the old and the young?"
Eivind found he was holding his breath. He took care not to look at the priest.
"I know nothing of that," Tig said. "I spent the best part of the winter on Holy Island. I saw no trace of your wolfskin, nor did I hear mention of him all that time. I was most surprised to encounter him on Angus's land. More than surprised. He nearly broke my arm before he realized I was no warrior."
"Indeed."
In a single word, Somerled had managed to convey both disbelief and scorn.
"Did Eivind speak to you of Ulf's death? What did he say of that?"
"My lord,"
Tig replied calmly,
"it was common knowledge among the folk that you yourself were responsible for that deed."
A gasp went around the hall, hands moved to sword hilts, as if this small, mild man were more threatening than any monster in their midst.
"It made sense. They knew their own kind had no part in it. King Angus conducted a most thorough investigation. Even his closest comrades and kin were interrogated at length. Angus knew you to be both ambitious and ruthless. It was clear to him that he would set up the murder to win your brother's position as leader here, and at the same time to incite your people to acts of violence against the folk. I congratulate you. You succeeded on both counts."
"Young man."
Olaf Sveinsson's tone was incredulous.
"Have you no fear at all for your own safety? A fellow can't simply walk into a king's hall and call him some sort of butcher."
Somerled supplied the word coolly.
"Priest, we have heard your ramblings, and frankly, they make even less sense than Eivind's. I remind myself that you are not of our people, and have little understanding of our ways. Yours is a soft faith, a comfortable faith, based on love and forgiveness, gentleness and inaction. We endured a perilous voyage to make our way to these shores. We are proud and warlike people whose deeds of courage in battle
whose raids and conquests are known and feared from Halogaland to Saxony, from Birka to Novgorod. We stride forward boldly, we vanquish the most tenacious of foes, we seize rich plunder, and set our stamp on new lands where we will. Look at our wolfskins, they are warriors of godlike strength. Indeed, they are inspired by Thor himself in their valiant deeds of combat. Odin, the trickster, gives us our cunning, our cleverness, and our determination. If we have triumphed here in the Light Isles, if we have deposed King Engus and his hapless underlings, that is no more than the natural defeat of a weaker breed by a stronger. I will speak no more of my brother's death. I relive the pain of that day every time the tale is told. But I will say one thing. In a place like this, remote, harsh, virtually untenanted, there is only one kind of leader who will succeed. It is not a leader who dreams and philosophizes and keeps company with Christian priests. It is a man who is unafraid to take his people forward into their new world, a chieftain who keeps control and knows enemy from friend. All that I am doing tonight, little priest, is being that leader. Without firm authority, there can be only chaos. That is why this case must be decided quickly, the penalty determined, the sentence carried out at dawn, in accordance with the new laws I have decreed. Men who oppose my rule have no place on the island. Men who act against me can expect to pay the price of their treachery with their lives. This is a frontier realm, the farthest point of man's voyaging, a place from which there is no going on and no going back. And I am king here. Would any man among you dispute that? Nobody said a word. It seemed to Eivind that someone had spoken a terrible kind of sense. After Ulf's death, he himself had believed for a little that his friend was the only possible leader here. There were other chieftains like him back home, such men ruled by fear. The look in their eyes, the edge in their voices were enough to command instant obedience. Yet tonight, four other men besides himself had summoned up the courage to speak against the king. It was not enough. He pondered dimly what sort of chance the wolfskins might have against the 50-odd other men who were gathered in the hall tonight. They could create havoc, certainly, crack more than a few skulls before they were brought down. He thought about the shackles, and how he would go about felling a man when he could scarcely walk. Foolish even to consider such a possibility. If this could not be won by truth and courage, it most certainly would not be won by another descent into violence and blood. His fellow wolfskins had already put themselves at grave risk on his behalf. They had done so even though they thought him a traitor. He must not set them in still greater peril. Perhaps it was just as well Eirik had not come.
Eivind!
Someone was speaking to him. His mind had wandered. While he thought of escape, the arbiters had risen and retired to a small chamber, and now only Olaf Sveinsson was left. Around the hall, ale was being poured, and the place buzzed with speculative chatter. Tige still stood there, his arm now in the grip of the heavily armed Thorvald. Gudbrand stood ready to convey Eivind himself back to the cell.
"Eivind," Olaf spoke again.
"It's time to go now. I don't think you heard the king. The two of you must return to your place of confinement until we reach our decision."
Olaf turned to Gudbrand.
"Treat them well. Give them food and drink. No rough stuff, understand? This man is sick. He's close to passing out. Don't forget he took a knock to the head that morning at the whaleback, and that was after a long winter of imprisonment and Odin only knows what conditions. Go on, take them down now."
"Wait, you can't lock up the priest," Eivind
blurted out, alarmed to see the way Thorvald hustled his captive out into the hallway.
"I'm the prisoner here, not him. He hasn't done anything." "The king's orders," Olaf said. "Believe me, I don't like this at all. If there were but one credible voice to speak on your behalf, Eivind, one unbiased witness whose account could not be challenged, I would demand an extension to the hearing, with time for further evidence to be gathered.
As it stands, your case is very weak, son. We can take little account of the testimony of your fellow Wolfskins, bound through old loyalties to speak up in your support. This priest, who was so close to the ear of King Angus, is not an impartial witness. As for your own account, you are a guileless fellow, at times almost too truthful. I think you must prepare yourself for the worst.
Eivind bowed his head.
Thank you for your honesty,
he managed through an increasing fog of dizziness.
The priest, can you try to ensure he is released? He's a good man. He has taken a risk to help me and... Believe me,
Ulf said quietly.
There are times when I would give much to be back in Rogaland. My influence here is far less than you imagine. Go on now. Take what rest you can.
Tig was saying a prayer. Eivind heard it in snatches, through the buzzing in his ears and the throbbing in his head. The sound of it was pleasing, something about a shepherd who kept his flock in right ways, leading them to sweet water and green pastures. The words reminded him of Hammersby, the fair meadows rich with the myriad hues of spring flowers, the sound of Carl whistling as he checked the progress of his thriving new lambs, the clank of a bucket as Thorgerd drew water from the well. He saw his mother sitting on a bench in the sun, her hair pale wheaten gold under the neat lace-edged cap, the dark Oksana by her side, brow creased as she concentrated on some fine detail of embroidery. Eirik's small sons played about the woman's feet. It was another life, another world. Tig was talking about death now, how the shepherd would lead his lambs safely through its shadow into a place where God himself dwelt, a place where there was no more darkness. Odin's bones, his headache was fierce indeed. It drove out all hope of reasonable thought.
Eivind.
The brother had finished his prayer. His voice came clearly from the cell next door, which had the same barred door as his own.
Eivind, is all well with you? Sorry,
Eivind mumbled, moving closer to the door grill.
My head hurts. My ears are full of noise. Can't seem to... Have they given you water?
Tig was keeping his voice low. They had been instructed not to speak to one another, but so far the guards had taken no notice.
Drink that. It may help you.
Then lie down. Bring your pallet up to the door.
I want to talk to you. Have you done that? Good. Lie quietly. Breathe slowly. I want you to tell me something, Eivind.
We have a friend in common.
You know the one I refer to, I think.
Grunted Eivind, who had done as he was told, and now lay on his back with his head on the straw pallet, his knees bent up awkwardly, for the cell was far too small to allow such a tall man to stretch out his full length. Tomorrow, perhaps, they would lay him in the earth. Then he would get as much room as he wanted.
This friend, I sense, still pursues the truth, though you and I appear to have reached the end of our road,
Tig said, in a voice that was little more than a whisper. Nessa. Where was she now? He prayed that she would not come here. He implored Thor and Odin and Freyr and any other god there was to take her away safely somewhere, so she might never again come within Somerled's grasp.
So, all is not lost,
Tig breathed.
She is alive. Not here, Eivind murmured. Best not here. You think our friend would agree with you? We are all fighters for truth, Eivind, the three of us. Best finish. In the morning, not you, not her, just me.
Thor's hammer, now he was going to be sick. Foul-tasting matter welled in his throat. He crawled to the corner where the bucket still stood and retched as if he would disgorge his very entrails. If he had to face death, If this were indeed his last night on Earth, this was surely a most pitiful way to pass the time left to him.
Eivind, are you all right? Eivind?
For a long time he could not answer. At length the spasm died down. He crept back to the pallet and curled himself up on it. The headache had retreated. He could hear more clearly now, though he kept his eyes firmly shut, for even the dim light from a lantern down the hallway was like knives in the skull.
Eivind.
Tige's voice was anxious.
I'm all right. I just want... sleep. This is a sorry business. Still, you must not lose hope. We are all God's children, and his hand stretches out over every one of us. For myself, I do not fear death. The manner of it, that gives me pause. I may be a priest, but I am still a man, and I had not thought to meet such a violent end. But I will go to it open-eyed, if our Father determines this is my time. I will walk forward unafraid to meet my Maker. For you, this is another matter, I know. You do not share my own faith, and I have no intention of spending my last night on Earth persuading you to it, although you are in all my prayers, Eivind. Our Heavenly Father watches over you, as he does over each of us, priest, warrior, fisherman, and king alike. Perhaps both of us will die tomorrow. You spoke to me once of your god, Thor. What does the afterlife hold for you, Wolfskin?
Eivind smiled grimly in the half-dark.
If we die on the field of battle, we are assured of an eternity spent at the god's right hand. Thor's warrior women descend to bear such loyal fighters home to Valhöll, to feast there among the great ones for all time. It will be another matter for me, I think.
His voice shook.
Thor abandoned me. He ceased to call me. In time, I accepted that. I learned there was another path for me to tread, the one I followed in returning here to confront Somerled with the truth. Now it seems that path was short indeed, and I have failed utterly in my efforts to stand up for what is right. I find I cannot, after all, face death bravely as a wolfskin should.
Nessa was in his mind, her wide grey eyes, her sweet lips parting to his own, the soft, tender warmth of her body.
I want so much to live, he whispered fiercely,
sudden tears flooding his eyes.
More than I've ever wanted anything before. I cannot die now, not when this task is yet unachieved, not when there are so many paths still to explore. I'm not ready to die, Tige. How can I leave her on her own, and yet if it made the difference between keeping her safe or putting her at risk, I would give up my life gladly. That probably seems foolish to you.
There was a little silence.
The greatest love is the love of God, Eivind, Tige said at length. That underlies all other loves. It is more powerful and binding than any earthly passion. Still, I understand you. If you have given your affection, your devotion, your loyalty to anyone on these islands, it does not surprise me in the least that it is to this friend of ours. She does inspire strong feelings. You know, I suppose, that she is a priestess of her own faith.
Shh, hissed Eivind, terrified that the guards would overhear. Whatever he did, he must not put Nessa at any farther risk.
Yes, of course I know that. I say this only to caution you. Should you survive, there might not be quite the future you envisage when you speak so passionately of your will to live. That's not important, Eivind muttered. Let us speak no more of this. I expect they'll call us soon enough, said Tige placidly. And perhaps there's time for another prayer. Let me see. Say the one about the shepherd again, Eivind whispered.
The soft voice began its flow of fair words anew, weaving a picture of a place where love and peace and beauty walked hand in hand, where hurts were forgotten and wounds salved, where everything was as it should be. It seemed to Eivind like a sweet bell measuring out the time of shadows. Chapter 14. There were whispers in the dark, furtive voices telling of something that must not be known beyond the walls of the shadowy place of captivity. It seemed they believed him asleep, huddled as he was on the straw pallet, his face turned to the wall. But Eivind was a hunter, and a hunter hears what other men cannot. They were discussing the manner of his death. Something had changed. Something had happened. And now no formal decision would be handed down, no fitting remarks would bring the hearing to its close. There would be no execution at dawn. Instead, there would be a covert snuffing out in darkness. Eivind strained to catch every word, his pulse racing, his heart thumping. He could not move. He could not alert his fellow captive, for it was vital they not realize he was awake.
Completely unexpected and unbelievably inconvenient. What does he think he's doing here?
That voice was Somled's, and there was an edge to it that Eivind knew well and disliked much.
How many are with him, my lord?
The messengers say 30 at least, straight on from Silver Bay, certainly before dawn.
Right, my lord. So what do we do now?
We can't wait. This must be cleared up before they get here, and cleared up in a way that leaves no adverse impression. You understand me?
Yes, my lord.
That voice was familiar too, one of those thugs from the Knarr, quicker with his fists than with his wits.
You want him finished off quiet-like?
It's not quite as simple as that, someone had said. I'm not asking you to commit murder. That would leave too many unanswered questions. This would be a straightforward case of attempted escape, where your efforts to apprehend the prisoner very unfortunately ended in his demise. Keep it behind closed doors, and don't make too much noise. Send a man up to fetch me when it's over.
But, my lord, you know the fellow's reputation. He's a wolfskin after all. What if he...
This was a different voice, and tinged with genuine fear.
If he frightens you so much, bind his hands before you start, someone had said coolly. Just make sure you untie them afterward, or it won't look good for you. I don't want it to be said that we beat prisoners here. Now get on with it, will you? There's no saying when our unexpected visitors may arrive, and I need to be sure we receive them in an appropriate manner. You appear hesitant. Do I detect some reluctance to carry out this order? The man's a coward and a traitor. What are you waiting for?
My lord, I'm wondering...
There was the sound of a door closing, then silence. Eivind waited a moment, senses alert to any sound. It seemed all had gone out, for now at least.
Eivind.
The hiss came from the adjoining cell.
Yes, I heard them.
Eivind was getting to his feet, forcing his cramped limbs to move, wondering what might be done against a whole group of assailants while his feet were still hobbled.
You must fight them, Brother Tide whispered fiercely. Fight and survive. There's hope in this somewhere. He senses defeat, or he would not act thus. You can do it, warrior. You, bidding me fight.
Maven breathed as he clenched and unclenched his fists, stretched his aching shoulders, stepped back from the grilled doorway so he might have some advantage when they struck.
A Christian priest. I would laugh if I could spare the breath for it. You are neither Christian nor a priest, observed Tyg dryly. You must fight for me, and for Nessa, and for the truth. You must fight for Somerled. If he kills you, it will lie like a curse on him all his days. Be strong, Wolfskin. I hear them coming.
Eivind stood very still. His head was clear now, though the light that flared suddenly down the hallway, a torch, a lantern, seared his eyes. He waited, poised for the moment of attack. The shackled feet could be used to advantage, if he were quick enough. He judged by the steps that there were 5 or 6 men. They did not believe him quite as weakened as rumour had suggested then. It seemed his reputation was not entirely lost. He paced his breathing in readiness, slow, steady, each inhalation a gathering of strength.
They would unbar the door, and possibly goad him out with clubs or sticks, and those waiting outside would likely use staves to topple him. Then it would be a beating, savage and quick. They wanted no noise, no evidence. That sounded familiar.
Very well. He would make as much noise as he possibly could before they silenced him. If Grimm heard him, if Erlind or Holgar recognized his voice, they might come.
If Olaf Sveinsson knew bloody murder was taking the place of justice here, surely he would intervene, whatever his fear of Somerled. The men were coming closer, their attempt at covert approach ludicrously inept. Clearly these were seamen or laborers, not warriors and hunters. Eivind waited for the hands on the grill, the creak of his cell door opening. But the door that opened was Brother Tige's, and the sound that rang out in the silence of that dark prison was that of a blow, and a gasp of pain and shock as the priest was hurled against the stone wall. He heard Tige's voice, breathless and uneven, reciting words Eivind had heard before, though he did not understand them.
Paternoster quies in coelus.
The prayer broke with another wrenching, indrawn breath, then resumed again, threadier now but full of determination.
Sanctificetur nomen tuum, fiat voluntas tua, Stop it!
Eivind yelled in outrage, fists now gripping the bars of his cell, face pressed to the grill, straining to see.
Stop that at once! Have you lost all shred of decency, that you assault a priest who is guilty of no crime but honesty? Leave that man alone, or in Thor's name I'll have the bars off this cage and make bloody mincemeat of every last one of you.
He wrestled the bars and felt the red heat rising in him, a fierce grimace contorting his features.
It's me you're supposed to kill, you godforsaken apologies for men, not him. Let him go at once.
He could not see Tige, but he heard the blows. The halting prayer went on, in his own tongue now.
Though death overshadow me, yet you lead me forth in the darkness. You're my strength and comfort. You...
Odin's bones. They would kill the brother right here before him. He thought he could hear ribs cracking. He could not allow this. Thor must not allow it. Eivind threw back his head and roared. He thundered the name of the god in a great outcry of fury and frustration, and under his grip, the grill door began to break from its hinges, half falling outward. He clung to it, struggling to gain steady footing in his shackles. Quick as the slice of a butcher's cleaver, several pairs of hands gripped his arms, closing iron rings about his wrists, joined by a length of chain which fastened him, firmly and neatly, to the grill itself. The last hinge gave, and the door fell to the ground with Eivind sprawled upon it, neatly bound in place, arms held firm by the manacles, face pressed against cold metal. A trap, it had been. A lure to bring him within reach. Clever. Too clever by far for any of these oafs. He thought he knew who had devised it.
Are you all right?
Eivind called out, and heard a gasping,
Yes,
before the first blow fell across his back. He fought as well as he might, twisting and writhing, wrenching at his bonds, flailing up and back with his bound feet. At least they had left the priest now, in order to concentrate on him. There was a kind of pattern in the way they went about it, as if they were under instructions to minimize visible damage while ensuring the result, eventually, would be as Somerled had requested. Somewhere not too far away, the prayer went on.
Thy house is a place where all paths run straight, Lord. If I walk forward in truth and courage, then in the end, that will be my one sure shelter.
A stunning impact on the temple brought the headache back to throbbing life. There seemed to be blood in his eye. The opportunity to do as Brother Tige recommended and fight back was somewhat limited, with his wrist bonds holding him face down on the collapsed grill, and the shackles restricting the freedom of his legs.
Fight for Nessa.
Think of her. Think of life and a future.
All paths run straight, truth and courage.
Fight for her, and fight for truth. And when he could not fight anymore, make noise, a lot of noise, for they'd said someone was coming. Someone whose arrival gave Somerled pause, and if he could just hold on long enough.
Thor!
Eivind yelled.
Thor be my strength, Odin be my guard and shield. Freyr, give me the power of your manhood. Beat me, would you, you cowards?
A club caught him in a glancing blow on the left ear. His head buzzed as if a swarm of angry bees had lodged behind his eyes.
"Somerled!"
he shouted with all the power left in his lungs.
"Somerled, come down and fight your own battles. Kill me in the darkness, would you, coward? Call yourself king, come down and fight!"
"Help!"
another voice was shouting now.